Hello, I'm Matt Kundle, and this is number 0321, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you not now, but right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0321. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, WWE Hall of Fame wrestler Mick Foley talks about his one-man show, a program that he got his big break with 3 years ago here in Montreal at Just for Laughs.
Yeah, that was a big break for me. I had worked hard and I'd gotten good enough to where I was able to do a double bill with a really respected international comic named Brendan Burns. And an agent from Innovative Artists saw my show and he was like, okay, I get it. Like, you got to work on it, but I get it and I think it'll do well. And so that was 3 summers ago and things have gone really well. I've been smooth sailing since then.
Zombie artist Rob Sacchetto on his latest project, a zombie coloring book.
It's a coloring book for more advanced tastes, people who are coloring in a therapeutic way, as a calming way. It's much more detailed. Like, the stuff that I'm doing is much more detailed, and the things that you see in the coloring books for adults is much more advanced material. So, you know, it's not like, you know, farm animals and stuff like that. It's kind of more like full drawings and things.
Odette Delacroix runs a fetish website called PetiteVersusPlump.com, where she is squashed by heavyset women. How did this get started?
It started from actually a custom video order. I have a custom video website where people can submit scripts for various sorts of fetishes and anything that really comes to their mind that they want to be custom and personalized. So someone said, because I'm so small, that if I worked with a really large woman, what they call in the industry a BBW, stands for Big Beautiful Woman, that it would be really amazing to see how I could handle it.
And there's lots and lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0321 was Matt Kundle from MattKundle.com, which offers radio solutions and media perspective for the digital age. And by the way, Matt's a really nice guy, too. You can check out his website. I mentioned it already, MattKundle.com. And Kundle is spelled C-U-N-D-I-L-L. So that's MattKundle.com. Thank you very much, Matt, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? 39-year-old Christina Balazzi of Florida, because these stories always seem to come from Florida, was arrested for stabbing her husband with a kitchen knife after he called her by the name of another woman during sex. She was charged with attempted murder. Police said that the couple was being intimate inside their home when her husband mistakenly called her another woman's name. Christina pulled the sheet over her husband's head and stabbed him with a kitchen knife, according to the police report. The husband, Christopher Balazzi, told police his wife of 10 years straddled him and stabbed him in the chest and neck at least 7 times. Balazzi finally managed to wrestle the knife away from his wife, and then he ran outside to get help. Christina got into her car and tried to flee, but was arrested after a brief police chase. She admitted to stabbing her husband because he had uttered the name of another woman in bed. Okay, what I'd like to know is, first of all, why someone has a kitchen knife next to their bed. But besides that, wouldn't you like to know what name he yelled out? I'm sure so would all the people he knows. Yeah. In North Carolina, police there said a woman drove donuts in an intersection, struck 4 vehicles, flipped her car, and gave her name as Faith, Hope, and Love. Gastonia police said witnesses reported the woman was driving donuts, you know, tight circles, with her car at around 4:25 p.m. on Thursday in a busy intersection and the motorist temporarily stopped her vehicle when police arrived. An officer asked the woman her name, and she replied, "Faith, Hope, and Love." The woman backed into the officer's car and struck it two more times before continuing to do donuts in the intersection. Police said the woman struck two civilian cars and a second police cruiser before she drove down a 12-foot embankment, knocked over a fire hydrant, and flipped her car onto its roof. Witness Rhonda Helms said police had to pepper spray the woman to take her into custody. She said the woman appeared to be singing, "Jesus Loves a Little Children, All Little Children of the World," yes, as she got out of her car. Police said the woman, whose name was not released, was taken to hospital for evaluation. Of course, you know, this story brings up two of the most common responses I have for stories like this. Number one, she gets a checkup from the neck up. And number two, the Lord works in mysterious ways. According to police affidavits, 51-year-old Martin Hoyer was on the second day of a methamphetamine binge in the state of Washington in his apartment when he saw, quote, and this is a quote, "Mexicans in the trees getting ready to jump out and attack him," unquote. Hoyer then saw two more Mexicans go to a downstairs neighbor, urging her to open Hoyer's door so they could rob him. According to the affidavit, Hoyer had his pistol in his waistband and went downstairs to save his neighbor from the Mexicans. The neighbor says she heard banging on her door, and when she opened it, she heard a loud bang, saw Hoyer fall to the ground, and heard him say, "Ow!" Hoyer's gun had discharged when he tried to kick in the door. The bullet skipped off of his hip joint and lodged in his scrotum. He was taken to hospital and remained conscious and communicative while he was being treated, then arrested on charges of first-degree assault, felony harassment, and unlawful possession of a firearm. He was held on $50,000 bail. Well, there's another ball-busting story for you, huh? More merriment on meth. Yes. 42-year-old Randy Richardson, vying unopposed for the Riceville, Iowa school board, having agreed to run just because he has two kids in the school, failed to get any votes at all, as even he was too busy on election day, which was September the 8th, to make it to the polls, nor were there any other write-ins. To resolve the 0-0 result, the other board members simply appointed Richardson to the office. Riceville, near the Minnesota border, is a big-time farming community, and registered voters queried by the Des Moines Register said that they were just too busy and had too much field work to do that day to go out and vote. Another case of democracy in action. School's out. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Jose Banks, now 40, filed a $10 million lawsuit in 2014 against the federal government because jailers at Chicago's high-rise Metropolitan Correctional Center failed to guard him closely enough in 2012, thus enabling him to think he could escape. He and a cellmate had rappelled 17 floors with bed sheets, but Banks was rearrested a few days later. Still, he claimed that the escape caused him great trauma, in addition to humiliation and embarrassment and damage to his reputation. In September, the U.S. Court of Appeals turned him down, wrote the judges, "No one has a personal right to be better guarded." So, he claimed humiliation and embarrassment and damage to his reputation, huh? Well, you know, before his lawsuit, he was just known as another criminal who was unsuccessful in his attempt to escape. You know, just one in a sea of many. But now, Jose Banks will be known as the whiny little baby whose feelings were all hurt by his capture. I think he's probably going to be in for some intense and immense hazing behind bars. On another note, where do you get enough bed sheets to rappel 17 floors? Where? Bed Bath and Way Beyond? Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Mick Foley is a legend among wrestling fans, but the three-time WWE champion and WWE Hall of Famer is more than just a wrestler. He's a best-selling author, actor, and a stand-up comic. In other words, he's a modern-day Renaissance man. Mick joins us on the line right now from New York City. Hi, Mick.
Hi there. I'm doing good.
I heard you say stand-up comic, and I cringed because although other comics will tell you that storytelling is, you know, is obviously a form of stand-up comedy, I think it chases away my audience. So let's just call it a one-man show.
A one-man show, which you were here in Montreal doing a bit of the Just for Laughs, were you not?
Yeah, that was a big break for me. I had worked hard, and I'd gotten good enough to where I was able to do a double bill with a really respected international comic named Brendan Burns. And an agent from Innovative Artists saw my show, and he was like, okay, I get it. Like, you got to work on it. But I get it, and I think it'll do well. And so that was 3 summers ago, a little over 3 years ago, and things have gone really, you know, gone really well. Been smooth sailing since then.
Okay, as I mentioned in the introduction, you've had a great career as a wrestler, and now you've transitioned into this role of, as you say, storytelling. I'm just wondering, before you started both, which one were you more nervous about? Was it more gut-wrenching when you started your wrestling career or when you started storytelling in front of what is admittedly smaller crowds than you were used to as a wrestler?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. The size of the crowd really doesn't matter. I remember being terrified when I would wrestle in front of 26 people in Poco, West Virginia, and being terrified when I did my show in front of 16 people in Worcester, Massachusetts. So, I mean, I was more scared in front of 16 people in Worcester than I was when I won the WWE title from The Rock in Worcester. Like, yeah, it's about, you know, getting out of your comfort zone and giving something a try. I'm very comfortable now. Like, I have a very healthy nervousness before the shows because I want them to be good. I work really hard to make them good. Like, I don't go through the motions. I really actively try to make the shows as much fun as they can be. Not necessarily funny with the NY, but fun. And so where some, you know, comics go is to make people laugh as hard as they can. All I want is the smile on the face when people leave. So I guess I liken it. I have never likened it before, but I'll liken it now to taking a trip to like an outrageous amusement park and you go on the best rides in the world, but you feel kind of sick afterwards and don't want to come back. Whereas if you go to a nice family-run park, and they've got some great rides, some scenic rides, a nice place to eat, and a couple of cool rides, you leave with a huge smile on your face, and a hope to come back. So that's the way I want people to feel, like they've been through a nice experience.
Now, for you, for the audience you attract nowadays, is this your wrestling audience, or have you found a whole new audience now?
No. That'd be nice to say I found a whole new audience. But it's almost entirely wrestling fans and those wives or girlfriends loyal and loving enough to tag along. And then oftentimes they have a really good time. And I really enjoy hearing from it's not always the women. You know, sometimes it's a husband who accompanies, you know, his wife who is a big wrestling fan. But almost every night, a few people go out of their way to say, I had no idea what to expect, and I really enjoyed it.
Well, you know, that's the other thing, too. When it comes to wrestlers, and now we've had a few who have broken into movies and have done other things, and we see them as more multi-dimensional as some people would initially think of wrestlers as. Did you have to get over a mindset of people? I mean, let's be honest, the older stereotype of wrestling was that, like, for instance, football players, like jocks and generals, not the brightest of guys. And yet, you know, here you are, you're, as I mentioned, a best-selling author of several books. You're doing the storytelling. Did you have to convince people that, hey, Mick Foley is not only a funny guy, he's a bright guy, too?
Well, I've really benefited over the years by those by hurdling over the bar of low expectations. I really have. Like, I've written 10 books, if you count 4 children's books, and every time I do a book tour, the appeal is a wrestler wrote a book, and it's surprisingly sensitive. You know, like, it shouldn't be a surprise if I've been doing it since 1999, but it is. And while that may seem frustrating, it works every time as far as generating publicity. But just on Tuesday night, I was in a New York screening of a documentary that I helped produced, and it's about a very serious subject of sexual bullying, also known as slut shaming. And the room, it wasn't in, it was a private residence, and the room was filled with doctors and professors. And I just got the sense, you know, that their perception was changing, because they all come in with a preconceived notion of what a pro wrestler is supposed to be. And it wasn't that I was any better than any of the other people on the screen. It's just that the expectations are so much lower for me. Are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. I think someone tried to call, and obviously I'm not going to answer that call when I'm on the phone with you.
Okay. Well, you mentioned your books, and 10 of them, and you have a recent one, your latest book, is a children's book. It's a Christmas book, The Most Miserable Christmas, right? Or Miserable?
A Most Miserable, yeah, based on one of the WWE characters, The Miz. And I thought he would make a great, bad kid in school who could not possibly understand how one of the other kids wouldn't want anything for Christmas. You know, almost like trying to force him. Like, of course, Christmas is about getting as much as you can possibly get. And the kid said, I'm trying to think of the rhyme here. The world out there is tough. Someday I may need some toys, but as for now, I have enough. You know, and then the man, enough. You can never have enough. Nothing. The Miz, and so it was a good story. It's good anti-bullying story, and several schools, used it to kind of teach a gentle lesson about treating other people with respect.
Now, in your post-wrestling careers, and I say plural careers because you've got many of them, what inspires you to what drives you? I know you have a family of four children, but what drives you to the many things you're doing creatively these days?
Well, it's always about getting a response. Being on stage doing the one-man show is as close to duplicating the way I used to feel when I was in a ring. Writing process is a lot different because, you are not getting an immediate response. Although, when I did write Have a Nice Day in 1999, one of the things I really loved was when the wrestlers would say, hey, can you read a little bit more of that? And I would read out loud to some of the guys and seeing them, laugh, where I thought, they might laugh and cringe. Was really it was like being in the ring. It gave me an idea that I might be able to do something else after wrestling. So it's really about, it's about getting reactions. And I'll be honest, when I was younger, a lot of the reactions going for were winces and cringes. I was a bad guy and I wanted to scare people, and I did. I terrified. Adults would come to the show and they'll be like, "You terrified me when I was a child." I think, good. That meant I was doing my job. But now I'm 50. I really, the only reaction I'm looking for is, I might shock people a little bit during the course of the show, and that's okay, but it's never an unpleasant thing. No one ever leaves thinking it was a really uncomfortable show. Some comics or, performers take pride in the fact that they can make their audience feel uncomfortable. I want everybody to feel comfortable at the shows, and they do.
Are the audiences, and I guess this is the same thing from when you were wrestling too, do the audiences differ from location to location? I mean, you do a lot of traveling, so are the audiences always the same, or are they different depending where you are?
You mean is it the same group of people traveling around the world to see me?
No, I just mean the reaction you get from them. Do you find that they react in different ways? Is what you do for the audience, does it get the same response at the same places in the same ways wherever you travel?
Every audience is a little bit different, And Friday night, for example, in Ottawa on the late show will be a much different show than the early show, because I know from experience that people are tired and they've been drinking. And so we won't have as many subtleties in that show, That's just what I've learned through experience. And I won't be a narrative woven throughout the show. It'll be a loose collection of stories. And I accept that people are going to be just yelling random stuff, not because they're ill-willed, but because they're kind of hammered, a few of them. Whereas, an early show on Friday or even a late show on Saturday doesn't have that same drowsy feeling to it. So you kind of adapt. That's where being in the ring, I think, gives me a really good advantage because, I've seen about every bad situation there is to see. And, wrestlers really think on their feet. You know, they react spontaneously to audiences around the world. And if they're not buying what we're selling on a given night, we got to come up with another product. Force them to purchase what we're selling, but you also adapt and you try to come up with something that they'll respond to. So it's the same way on the stage. If I'm having a tough time with something or stories are making sense, I've got something special lined up for these six shows, three cities, six shows. And I think it's going to be great. If it doesn't prove to be great in the first show, I'll give it a try on the second one. If it falls flat, I'll know it wasn't meant to be, and we'll call an audible and tell different tales.
So it's just a different experience, and in these days, you don't have to worry about personal injury or losing body parts. It's great.
No, not unless it's a particularly bad night. But you do have to worry about the bruised ego, which can hurt far worse.
People can...
There's some nights where you just, you realize, all right, I'm going to get through this. We're going to give people the illusion that I'm having a great time and I'm going to be a professional. And there are other nights where it almost feels magical, on the stage. And I think that's the same for anybody, if they're an actor on stage or a singer. There's some nights they're really feeling it, and other nights they realize they just have to do their best to put on a good show.
People can find out the shows. You mentioned Ottawa. There's other cities you're going to. There's all the information on your website, which is realmickfoley.com, correct?
That's correct, yeah. They can go there and they can learn more about the show. They can buy tickets directly from my website, or they can, I think in the case of Belleville, I think they have to call or they have to get the tickets at the show. But I don't think Belleville has a chance of selling out, so people could be fine just showing up 30 minutes ahead of time.
Mick, thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. Continued success with all you
Thanks.
Do.
Well, much appreciated. Have a nice day.
That was WWE Hall of Famer Mick Foley, who is now a storyteller. I will not make the mistake of calling him a stand-up comic again. He could probably still hurt me. He's performing in Belleville, Ontario on October 15th, Ottawa on October 16th and 17th, and Kingston on October 18th. Tickets are available right on his website at realmickfoley.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0321, and you'll find the link.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Coming to you from the outskirts of sanity, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to zombie artist Rob Sachetto about his new coloring books. Plus, we'll meet a woman who makes a lot of money, with her website petiteversusplump.com, where she is squashed by heavyset women. And of course, that's all on video. There's an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on as well, plus much more Stuff File news right here, right now on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, in August, 25-year-old Shay Hearn, who police said had just shoplifted electronic items from the Walmart in Round Lake Beach, Illinois, was picked up while on foot near the store. Police found that Hearn had actually driven his car to the Walmart, but that while he was inside shoplifting, a repo agent who had followed him to the store had confiscated his car. You know, you have to have proper planning when you're living a life of crime, but also, you need to pay your bills. Yeah. A 778-pound man, yes, that's right, nearly 800 pounds of human flesh, a guy from Rhode Island, claims he was kicked out of a local hospital for ordering a pizza. 33-year-old Stephen Asante was a patient at Rhode Island Hospital where he was getting help with his weight issues. He had been in the hospital for 80 days and lost 20 pounds. He was supposed to lose over 100, but was asked to leave after ordering the high-calorie food, which violated his care plan. "I was supposed to stay there and lose all my weight and get down to 550 pounds to get the gastric bypass," Asante said. "That was their plan." His father, Stephen Villette, told the station he had nowhere to take his son, who suffers from an addiction to food. "If he comes home and I do get him up the stairs somehow, some way he's going to get right back into his old eating habits," said Villette. "I just don't know who to turn to." Villette transported his son in the trunk space of his SUV to the Kent Hospital emergency room, but it is unclear if he would be able to remain there. Okay, I've seen the pictures of this guy who at nearly 800 pounds is absolutely huge. But I'm not going to vilify him because, you know, clearly he has an addiction. But what I will say is that he is an internet sensation, and I'm guessing somewhere along the way, he has a series of enablers because at his current weight, he just can't go out and get all the food he wants. Someone has to bring it to him. So at some point, there are people around him who have to take a little more responsibility for his life. And by the way, the amount of food he is scarfing down, it can't be cheap. Someone's paying for this food too. So, you know, there are people around him that need to step up their game because obviously this guy cannot. Anyway, a young Saudi bride has filed a divorce from her husband because he's too short. In a legal document obtained by Gulf News, the 20-year-old said that the height difference made her feel painfully uneasy during their seven-month marriage. She stuck it up for 7 months, huh? How nice of her. Towering over her groom resulted in mockery and shocked looks she could no longer handle, she said. Sheikh Mohammed Al-Jirani, the head of the endowments department, told a Saudi daily the request was one of the strangest he'd ever seen. The couple from Al-Katif in Saudi Arabia's eastern province wasn't named. What? Do they only date sitting down? I mean, she must have known at some point before they got married just how tall he was. Anyway, this extremely shallow woman will probably marry a taller man who is a cretin. Because, you know, that would be karma. Prosecutors say a Utah man posed as a federal agent in an attempt to get VIP tickets to a Comic-Con event in Salt Lake City. Jonathan M. Wall was indicted on federal charges after the 29-year-old Layton man allegedly claimed he needed passes to catch a fugitive at the event where many attendees wear elaborate costumes. Authorities say a security official got suspicious of Wall, who was posing as a special agent with the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. The official contacted the Air Force, whose agents confirmed that Wall didn't work for them. Wall faces charges of impersonating a federal officer and making a false statement. The September comic book convention attracted about 120,000 people and featured Captain America actor Chris Evans. You know, not that I condone criminal activity, but you gotta give the guy some style points for creativity, don't you? I mean, really, come on. A woman wanted on identity theft charges has been arrested in Oregon after a construction worker lifted the lid of a portable toilet to find her hiding inside. 27-year-old Treasurer Dawn Shockey, who had two warrants for her arrest, ran when police in Eugene tried to talk to her. Police say a witness told them she saw the woman run through her yard and climb a fence onto the property of the Eugene Swim and Tennis Club. About 20 minutes later, a construction worker told police he had lifted the lid of a porta potty and been surprised to see her inside. Police said Shockey left the toilet and they arrested her. You know, I have to admit, I would need to be wanted for a major capital offense, like perhaps murder, before I decided that my best place to hide was in the toilet bowl of a porta potty. Needless to say, Shockey will definitely be going from the can to the can. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, police in Ohio say they were called to a house by a man who complained he'd gotten too high smoking marijuana. Austintown Township Police found a 22-year-old man curled up in a fetal position on the floor when they went to his house. He was groaning and surrounded by snacks that included Doritos, Goldfish crackers, and Chips Ahoy cookies. Reports state the man told officers he couldn't feel his hands. Well, how did he call the cops then? Anyway, officers found a glass jar of marijuana and paraphernalia in the man's car after he gave them his keys. The man refused medical treatment and so far has not been charged with a crime. You know, perhaps he should now get an endorsement deal with Doritos, Goldfish crackers, and Chips Ahoy's cookies. What do you say? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest, shall we? Zombie artist Rob Sachetto is back on the program. It's been over a year since we last talked to him, and back then we talked about how zombie art was the perfect gift for the holidays, which, by the way, is still a perfect gift. But this time around, he has another zombie project to talk about. It's a coloring book. Rob joins us right now on the line from Sudbury, Ontario. Hi, Rob.
Yes, hi. How you doing?
Fine, and you, sir?
I am busy in my little workshop here creating the coloring book as we speak, so it's never a dull moment over here.
I can imagine. Now, coloring books, you know, when one thinks of coloring books, one naturally thinks of kids. However, it's a whole new trend in the last few years where adults are now using and playing with coloring books. Is this the market you're going for?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an adult coloring book. It's a coloring book for adults, rather. You know, some people sort of go, oh, it's like, you know, a sexy coloring book or something. And it's like, no, it's a coloring book for more advanced sort of, you know, tastes, you know, people who, you know, are coloring, for like, you know, in a therapeutic way, as a calming way. It's like a, it's much more detailed. Like, the stuff that I'm doing is much more detailed, and the things that you see in the coloring books for adults is much more advanced material. So, you know, it's not like, you know, farm animals and stuff like that. It's kind of more like full drawings and things.
Okay, so when you do a coloring book, it's I guess the standard coloring book type of situation. You basically draw outlines of whatever it is you want to draw, and the outlines within the outline, so to speak, and people can color it in as they choose, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of coloring books out there that are sort of more like patterns and things, and they're sort of like just sort of flat color kind of stuff. But the one I'm doing is like, I'm gearing all of the art specifically to color in like virtually every area. So there's no black areas. And what I'm doing is actually creating you know, ready to color art that can be hung. And I'm looking at it more as a collaboration with anyone that picks up the coloring book. You know, I'm doing the art, they're doing the coloring, we're doing it together. And that's kind of how I'm looking at executing this. The art I'm creating is like there's definitely zombies in it. There are, you know, monsters. It's sort of a sci-fi fantasy horror type thing. It's in my sort of voice. It's my it's my kind of subject matter I'd like to do. And I think there's something for everyone in it. I think everyone will really enjoy doing it.
Now, are you recommending the colors that be used for the coloring book, or are you leaving that for up to the imagination of the person who's doing the coloring?
I'm absolutely leaving it up to the imagination of the people coloring it. I'm sure there'll be some crazy stuff in there. And I love that. I think that would be a fantastic thing. I really want to be privy to the outcome of what people do. And I will encourage people to, send me shots of photos, Instagram shots or Twitter shots or anything when they're done, because I'd really love to see the outcome of all these individual coloring jobs. I think it'll be crazy and fun.
Now, what are you recommending they use, by the way? Is it your famous box of 64 Crayolas, or are you talking colored pencils, or what are you or even paints? What are you recommending? How are you suggesting this be done?
I think this could really be done with a lot of different materials. I think even watercolor will the paper will. I think take watercolor. I think we're gearing it to that. But I think it's more for dry materials like marker, pencil, crayon, things of that nature. Even crayon, there's a lot of small details in there, so you'll want to have your pencils really sharp, and get some really cool markers. There's so many. There are so many different coloring tools out on the market right now. It's kind of wide open. And basically, all the pages are going to be perforated, so you can just actually pull them out. And if you want to frame it, then you can actually frame it easily, too. So all the artwork will be, you'll be able to take it out and frame it if you want.
Are we talking, I guess, then a glossy-type paper?
It's got a bit of a tooth to it, just because some of the cheaper pencil crayons or some of the ones that are not as advanced are a little waxier. So I kind of made sure we did some paper tests, and we kind of made sure that even the sort of the cheaper pencil crayons, which are fine too, as long as you can color with it, can be used on it, because they're a little harder. And they have less pigment in them, like coloring pigment. So we kind of tested things out to make sure that most, virtually every pencil crayon on the market will go on it, and any marker will too.
And what are we talking about the size? Is it standard 8.5 by 11, or are you going bigger?
Standard 8.5 by 11 to start. I really wanted to get this out and to the public and kind of be sort of a gauge to see if, maybe people want more. And I've just put so much work into this. It's I think it's probably the toughest thing I've done in years, because of the vast amount of detail and coming up with all the images basically from scratch. And they're full scenes with tons and tons of detail. So, I want to see, maybe it'll be a hit. I hope it will be. I think people will really dig it. I haven't seen anything in the market like it. So I wanted to come up with something really different and something that I think a lot of people will enjoy.
Now, when we first started talking many years ago, it was because you were doing celebrity zombie art. Will there be any celebrity zombies within the coloring book, or is it just standard zombie scenes?
There are no celebrities in this book. There are a couple of zombie scenes. There are a couple of monster scenes. There are lots of, there are fairies and, horned women within gardens and all kinds of weird, crazy fantasy, cool fantasy stuff. Giant monsters, there's all kinds of sci-fi, fantasy, sort of horror stuff in there. There's, fun stuff, sort of more, stuff that's geared a little more serious. And it's definitely for a more adult taste.
I don't think I've ever asked you this before, but what do you see when you dream?
Little puppy dogs and kittens, lollipops and stuff. I get all my stuff out when I draw, I think, So yeah, everything's everything's like rose colored after that, really.
So when will this coloring book be available? How do people get it? I know you started a Kickstarter program, did you not? Or you're starting one?
Yeah. Yeah, the Kickstarter, all the information will be on there. I'm gonna try promoting it like nonstop so that everyone gets a peek at it and gets to know everything about it, and you know, obviously set up the links and everything. So it's very, very, very accessible. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to the response. The response so far to the art, the sort of clips that I've teased out there so far, has been fantastic. So I really hope it's a hit with everyone, and I really hope everyone enjoys it.
And people can find more information by going to your website at zombieportraits.com.
Yeah, actually, zombieportraits.com. I will put info on there. I will put info on my fan site on Facebook. Basically, same zombie Rob Zombie Portraits. My own Facebook page as well. Twitter, my own Twitter account, zombieportraits.com as well. The information will be hard to miss. It'll be kind of be everywhere.
And what will the coloring book sell for, and how many pages will it be roughly?
It's going to be 20 pages at $15. They're going to be single-sided, so again, you can, like, if you want to use markers, you can, you know, you can let the bleed through show, like, go through type of thing, and it's all good. The paper, like I said, the paper will be, you know, strong enough or resilient enough to take different types of medium, coloring medium. So it's I think it's going to be fantastic. I'm really looking forward to sharing it with everyone.
It's another great idea, Rob. I thank you very much for being on the program to tell us about it.
Thank you so much.
Zombie artist Rob Sachetto. You can check out his website at zombieportraits.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0321, and you'll find links to Rob's website. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. In the fairy tale known as Billy Goat's Gruff, a troll who hides under a bridge threatens anyone who tries to cross over it. In real life, a new kind of troll is threatening job providers across America. It's called the patent troll. A patent troll is someone who owns a patent but doesn't produce the product or use a method protected by it. Instead, the so-called troll sues other job providers who either do something or make something similar to the patent, but not exactly what it covers. It's a murky area of the law, and that's why it's been widely abused in recent years. Victims of patent trolls have included everyone from famous comedians and popular websites to small home builders and large consumer product makers. Let's be fair, patents are important because they give incentives to inventors to be creative. But in the hands of unethical trolls, they've become nothing more than assault weapons for holdup artists. And that really gets my goat. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
This is your safe haven from the hard news of the day. The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for your happy place.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the person behind the website, Petite versus Plump. But I've got one more Stuff File news story to share with you here before we get to our last guest here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, Russian police said a pair of five-year-old boys used garden spades to tunnel under a fence and escape their kindergarten in an attempt to purchase a Jaguar. Police said the boys slipped away from their teacher on multiple occasions in the schoolyard and dug under the fence over the course of several days. The boys were eventually able to squeeze through the tunnel and made their way to a Jaguar showroom a few miles away from the school. Police said the boys told a woman who approached them outside the showroom that they were in the market for a grown-up car. The children were taken to a police station where they were released into the custody of their parents. The parents did not pursue a formal complaint against the school or the boys' teacher. Olga Denishenko, acting head of preschool education at the school, was quoted as saying in the Siberian Times that disciplinary actions had been taken against the employees. "This is a very serious breach of rules. The head of the group that allowed this to happen was fired," she said. The acting head of the kindergarten has been given administrative notice. Oh, I think we're going to be hearing a lot more from these kinder escape artists in the years to come as they perfect their escape tactics, don't you? Yes. Anyway, let's get to our next guest, shall we? Odette Delacroix has found a unique way to earn a living. She gets squashed by women. Odette's website is called PetiteVersusPlump.com, and on her site, you can see a video of her being squashed by women who weigh upwards of about 350 pounds. How did this business come to be? Well, let's find out. Odette joins us on the line right now from Los Angeles. Hi, Odette.
Hi.
So
nice to be chatting with you.
Nice to be chatting with you, too. So how does a business like this start?
It started from actually a custom video order. I have a custom video website where people can submit scripts for various sorts of fetishes and anything that really comes to their mind that they want to be custom and personalized. So someone said, because I'm so small, that if I worked with a really large woman, what they call in the industry a BBW, it stands for Big Beautiful Woman, that it would be really amazing to see how I could handle it.
Okay.
And so, I'm always up for challenge, so I accepted that.
Okay, so as you said, you're small, you're 5 foot. How much do you weigh, may I ask?
About 80 pounds.
So when somebody came up with this idea to you on the website, on the service that you offer, was there any concern on your part, just the physics of it all?
I wanted to do a little bit of practice before we actually started rolling the camera. And luckily I found a BBW model also located in LA, and she had a lot of experience working and being with women who were much smaller than her. And so she kind of guided me through it, and we created a sort of sign language that I do to tell them when I'm getting close to needing some air. Because it's mostly that the pressure from their weight isn't the hard part. The hard part is that when they're on top of you, you can't breathe.
Okay. So, again,
It went well. It was easier, honestly, than I thought. So I decided to go ahead with the video. I had a fun time. I thought it was going to be a one-off thing, but then I decided to sell it just for my own amusement on my website, and it sold more than anything I had ever made before.
And what kinds of things were you making before, by the way?
I was getting a lot of various fetish requests, everything from dirty talking and role play to daddy-daughter, sister stuff, amateur scenes, highly produced sex scenes, wearing diapers, eating certain kinds of food, playing in the mud, getting my feet dirty, giving foot jobs, all sorts of. I ran the gamut of all these different popular fetishes, but that one was the one, the BBW with a skinny little chick like myself. Just did it for it. I reached like this huge market that I never had before, and I felt a desire right away to make more of that. And so I started compiling all this footage. I started shooting it, and that first BBW introduced me to all her fellow model friends. So I had access to a pretty good group of girls.
Now, I understand from the story that I read about this in a newspaper that you can earn something like about $180,000 in doing these videos over the last little while. Is that an accurate figure?
Yes.
Wow.
Between, because I cash in on it three ways. Each video can make revenue in three different venues. I have now the PetiteVersusPlump.com website, and that got a lot of publicity, so the traffic was there, so the sales are pretty good. And then on top of that, every time I make a custom video, I'm being paid by the fan to make it. So there's a lot of extra cash to be made there. And then I also have a clips for sale store as well that I recycle the footage and put on there. So between those three, I've hardly had to do anything else. I still will do other modeling jobs for companies that I like and producers that I get along with, but this has become more or less my full-time job.
And we should mention that this is something you do on for your website, which again I mentioned, which is petiteversusplump.com. But this is not what you do in your personal life, correct?
I mean, I've never dated a BBW. I have a lot of them are my close friends now, and I do enjoy. I think I have good on-camera chemistry with a large number of them. And I've always had what I would describe as an encasement fetish, which means I like being sort of squashed and surrounded. I have like the opposite of claustrophobia. And with that sort of tendency to get turned on by being pressed up against, it was very easy for me to get better and better at shooting this content and truly like enjoy it and have a nice time.
Now, the videos, from what I understand, could involve more than just you and one other woman. So there can be multiple women in these videos, weighing upwards of around 300 pounds or so. So, I mean, when you add that all together, again, you're 5 foot, 80 pounds. Is there, I'm assuming there's a safe word. I'm assuming there are people around who can tell when you're in distress. I mean, has anything ever happened where you were concerned or you got close to even just simply passing out? There's a certain danger there, isn't there?
Honestly, the only times I've ever been concerned on set was actually for the BBW models, because one of them pulled a muscle one time maneuvering. Another one hurt her back when she was lifting me up. And then one model actually got stuck in a bathtub because she was so large. As for me, it's probably the only thing that I shoot as a performer where I have not had any injuries. I mean, yes, it does not feel pleasant at times, and sometimes I can be a little bit sore the following day, but really that's all that has ever happened.
Now, from reading the story, I know you have a boyfriend. I know you have parents.
When that story was published, I did. But no, we're still good friends, and we collaborate on the site together.
Okay. But I was going to ask, what does your family say? What do your parents say about all this?
Oh, they love it, because they'd rather me do something like this than gangbangs and more harder sorts of porn. I mean, they've always been supportive of me as a businesswoman. I did incredibly well in school. I had a pretty high-end job after college, so I gave them a lot of things to be proud of. And then when I decided to start this business, they were very hesitant of me and warned me that I shouldn't walk away from a job and do something crazy like this. But they knew that I liked to model, and they knew that it made me happier than anything else. So my parents live in Maine. That's almost 3,000 miles from where I live. And I told them, I was like, look, I'm going to give this a shot. Give me a year. Let's see where this business goes. And there's nothing you can do to stop me. I'm an adult, and you're over that. And I think I can make a good income doing this. Mm. So I just invested every last penny into it on a whim, and it has paid off.
Now, this has become very popular. Where do you find most of your clientele is from? You're in Los Angeles. Are there parts of the United States where this is extremely popular? Are there other parts of the world where this is extremely popular? Where do most of your clientele come from?
About 50% of them are actually from Europe and Japan. So it's spread out between a lot from the UK, which a lot of that results from the press coverage I got in the UK this year. And the Japanese really love the whole squashing concept. So the sales are very good there as well. As far as in the US, it's spread out. I don't get a lot of orders from the Midwest, but every other region is about even in sales.
Well, as the saying goes, you know, different strokes for different folks. You have certainly found a niche for yourself. People can find out more information by going to your website, which is petiteversusplump.com, correct?
Yes, Correct.
Odette.
And Versus is VS.
VS, of course.
VS.
Odette, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you as well. I had fun talking about my little site, and I can't wait to see where it takes me in the future.
Odette Delacroix. Again, you can go to her website at petiteversusplump.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for the show, which is number 0321, and you'll find links to Odette's website. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Police were searching for suspects in bank robberies in Nelsonville and Asheville, Ohio. They caught a break when photos appeared on social media of 28-year-old John Mogan II and 24-year-old Ashley Dubow brandishing wads of money. Some photos show Mogan shoving cash into his mouth, and another shows Mogan and Dubow embracing while holding the money. The pair was arrested and charged with robbery and theft and are being held on $250,000 bond. Yes, putting your money where your mouth is, impressive. Putting someone else's money where your mouth is, less impressive. And sadly, my question is one that is becoming way too common of late. Why, oh why, would anyone who committed a robbery flaunt their success on social media with pictures? One reason, and one reason only, they're idiots!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0321. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0321. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air online or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded in iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. While it may be an enjoyable, pleasant experience, some side effects may occur. Listening to Peter may cause bloating, drowsiness, Tourette's, web feet, or an oily discharge.